Hi everyone, this is Enrico and I'm here together with Moritz.
Hi everyone, this is Moritz.
And here is our first episode of the Data Stories podcast.
Hey everyone, it's a new Data Stories. Hi Enrico.
Hey.
How are you doing?
That's not just another episode of Data Stories.
It's a very special episode.
It's the 100th episode of Data Stories. Congratulations.
Yeah, three-digit club.
Oh my God.
It's crazy, no?
How did we get to... Yeah, here.
Yeah, I don't know. I think we just kept going.
Yeah.
I think that's the secret.
It seems almost like, who did it? I don't remember having done all this stuff together.
Yeah. I think we both probably at some points thought about like, shall we really continue doing this? It's so much work, right? Yeah. I mean, I did for sure.
Of course.
But but somehow we kept going. It's amazing. It's nice.
Yeah. It's like a whole couple, you know?
Exactly. Can't live with or without each other. So what can you do?
Yeah.
No, but it's amazing. 100 is such a huge number. And I think now it just becomes even more interesting now that we have this mass of, you know, previous conversations and all the people we met and all the new things we learned. And yeah, it's just building up this rich, collection of stuff. I really enjoy it. So we just passed also 10,000 Twitter followers.
Yay.
A few days ago. Really nice.
Not bad. Yeah.
And so yeah, it's nice. It's people seem to be interested, so that's good.
To some extent.
Yeah, we had more effects and figures. Of course, we're a data podcast, so we had up to now 528,000 and 387 downloads of all episodes total.
Yeah.
I mean, I think 60,000 of those are like for a missing file that doesn't exist on our server. We should maybe say that, which is always annoying.
That's the most popular one.
Yeah. It's like so that's a technical glitch, but no, it's a really decent amount of downloads. Last month, 24,000 downloads. So good stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for listening, dear listeners.
Thanks so much. Yeah. So I have a question for you, Moritz.
Yes.
Do you know when we published our first episode?
First ever. Must have been in the 90s.
Yeah.
5 years ago or something? Like more than five, I guess, so right? I mean, let's look it up. Let me see.
Yeah,
I have it was in called front Exuberant Animated Data Kitsch. I would still
that's still
be
the best title
in hearing
ever.
About that. Yeah,
that's the best title ever.
Yeah, and yeah, it must be, yeah, February 2012. Yeah,
yes,
yeah,
yeah, 14th. That was Valentine's Day.
Wow,
I don't know if it means anything. So.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah, lots of things have changed in the past.
My God.
Compared to now.
Yeah. So I think one of the first things we want to do today is to go through our top 10 episodes and briefly comment on them, right?
We should mention we have no special guest. It's just the two of us. You're stuck with us
Yes,
although later on we bring in two very special guests.
Yeah.
It's sort of... Yeah.
Let's wait for that.
A surprise. Yeah.
It's a surprise. It's a little bit of a surprise. Yeah. So, Moritz, do we want to go through the top 10? So that's top 10 in terms of downloads, right?
Yeah. Most popular episodes.
Most popular episodes. Yeah.
I'm wondering if that favors basically more the older ones or the younger ones. I'm not sure. There might be a sort of a bias there.
Not necessarily, because we do have some recent ones there. So that's...
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not even sure because like our listenership has been growing, but also the older ones had more chances to be downloaded.
Of course,
not sure.
Yeah.
Whatever. So take it too seriously.
Don't take it too seriously.
But, yeah. But number one was the one on data visualization literacy with Jeremy Boy, Helen Kennedy, and Andy Kirk, which to me was sort of surprising. It was like a complicated topic and like three different guests. And it was also a difficult recording. If I remember, we were sitting in my hotel room also partly, and it was a tricky recording, like technology-wise. But super popular. So data visualization literacy seems to be a big topic, huh?
Yeah, and it's still a very big topic. So I'm glad to see that happening.
Yeah. And I think this whole like topic of learning and teaching and getting started with data visualization and how to improve and how to make the next step and so on, this has been a recurring theme for us, right? And I guess also to many of our listeners is like the main interest also in the podcast.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. The second one is ggplot2r and data tool making with Hadley Wickham.
Yeah.
And I'm not too surprised that's been a very popular one. Of course, Hadley has a huge following and he had a lot of impact with his tools and he's still, having a lot of success. So it was great having him on the show and talk a little bit about, how he got there and what's his philosophy behind generating tools for people to create data visualizations.
It's really interesting. He's such a clear thinker. And he seems to think about this whole process and also what tool making actually means and even like the naming. So he's really smart about the naming of his tools. Yeah, but you know, all of this is important. And I think this was a really, really interesting one. And he's, I think he's to many people like a sort of a guiding figure in many ways. And
it's great to have him. Big contribution, around, very big practical contribution. Exactly. If I had to name like 10 people in this, he would certainly be there, right?
Yeah. Really productive guy. Yeah. Third one, Amanda Cox, the one and only Amanda Cox. She's the best, I mean. on working with our NYT project and her favorite data.
Yeah, that's another case. I think she's so popular and she's done so much good work. I'm not surprised we have her in the top three, right?
Yeah. And she's great. She like always on point, always funny, always like a fresh perspective also on things you might have heard before, you thought you have heard before, but she always brings in an interesting new spin on these recurring themes. And she's great.
So I think she gave a talk recently, right? That was OpenVizConf. Something like that. Yeah.
And that's a great follow-up if you enjoyed our podcast with Alberto Cairo on uncertainty and the role of media today. I think that's a great follow-up because she reports really well on their election coverage and they got a lot of like beating basically for their last year's election coverage. And she explains a bit on the thinking behind it and the general challenges of communicating uncertainty. Really good talk and really inspiring and interesting.
So the next one is what happened in Viz in 2015, year review with Andy Kirk and Robert Cosara. And if you've been listening to Data Stories for a while, you know that that's a kind of like a classic combo, having Andy and Robert together. And also the year review has been a classic for us since many years. I'm not sure whether we did it every single year, but we have done it for a few years. So it's, I don't know exactly why this one has been so popular, but it's always been funny to go through the whole year and figure out what were the main highlights, and we would certainly keep doing that, right?
No, we did one every year actually, so there's five of them.
Every
I think
year.
This could also make a fun like binge listening series of episodes because you could basically fast forward your way through time, like cover 5 years in like 5 hours or something and see how the conversation has changed and how the field has changed. I also really liked our last year ones, which is actually on position number 6, so it's not that far away, where we said, okay, so before we always had like a small group of people, and I think mostly Andy and Robert talking about the rear review stuff. So we said we want to mix it up a bit. And so we took 5 or 6 different people from around the world and talk to them. And I think that was nice. And I would love to continue more, showcasing a bit more work from people around the world, different types of people than just the usual suspects.
Yeah. And I have to say that for me, that's been one of the main highlights for the year and probably even for the entire show ever. I think doing the Dataviz around the world has been a lot of work. Much more than
it's
usual.
It's a huge logistical challenge.
Listening to it, I don't know how much you can realize that, but it's been a few weeks of hard work, and I'm really happy that we managed to reach people in very remote places and basically figure out what's going on there. And the biggest revelation was, hey, there are a lot of amazing people doing Dataviz in other countries, right? And that's a constant challenge for us, right? Trying to find a way to be more inclusive. It's a big, big, big challenge and something that we're always trying to improve. So I think that this episode has been one of the main highlights for me.
Yeah. It was a fun one for sure. Yeah. Number five is Boku and OpenViz Conference. That was a great one too. Both because Boku is a cool company and of course because OpenViz is a great conference. So it's like a double take here. And yeah, I think OpenViz Conference this year also, the program was really great again. And I haven't watched all the talks, but a couple of them. And it's I think it's quite great what they were able to put together there. So great stuff.
Yeah. So the seventh position, we have iQuant New York, Finding Surprising Stories in New York City Open Data with Ben Wellington. That's been an awesome, awesome episode.
So good.
We had so much fun recording it. Ben is a natural. And I think what one interesting thing that he did, he kind of like started a kind of style of new style of blogging about data and data visualization. So I think later on we saw more people doing similar stuff, but it's been one of the first people saying, hey, let me analyze this data set, figure out what interesting story I can say about that and just publish a blog post on it. And he also had a huge impact with some of the stories. So it's been awesome. Yeah.
And it's just so nice. So he takes publicly available data, simple tools,
exactly.
I mean, he also uses like advanced tools, but often it's stuff you can do basically with freely available simple tools. And then publishes it and like gives it a good story and actually reaches something with it, right? And has an impact. And I think that was so, so good to see that if you just bring these basic ingredients together in a smart way, there's so much you can do. And I think the episode we had with Lisa Charlotte Rost, it was similar in a way because she took Google search data you can download and simple tools, but then found out all these really interesting things about her own search behavior, right? And I always love that when, you know, it's one thing to hear from crazy data artists doing like six-figure projects or something, think like, wow, that's amazing. But I think it's even more amazing if somebody can do something like cool with just the basic tools.
Yeah. There's no limit to the amount of cool stuff you can do from home, right? This is getting better and better.
So. Number eight, also one of my personal favorites, Statistical Numbing with Paul Slovic. Really good. Challenging recording, like technically, was like hugely challenging. And also, I think it was slow. It was a really slow episode in a way that we talked for a really long time until we came to the point we were actually like trying to get to. And, you know, so during the recording, I felt like, oh, I'm not sure if this is going well. but somehow he has so much like knowledge and was able also to drive it all home so well. And it's the point he makes is so deep and interesting and also counterintuitive. And so, yeah, it was really good.
Yeah. No, I have to say it's one of the main highlights for me as well. I had the same feeling. I was really, I didn't know how people would receive this episode. And I was really surprised by the reaction. I'm surprised that this episode is in the top 10 list. And I have to say that probably struck a chord because, I mean, talking about this issue of the fact that numbers and statistics just cannot communicate emotions very well, it's been something I don't know. I think people just needed to hear the science behind that. And I have to say that after the episode has been published, a few people started talking about this idea much, much, much more often, right? There have been a few presentations. I think Lisa Rost as well had a one or two presentations touching upon this point. I guess Alberto Cairo also talked about some of these things. I can remember Stephen Few publishing a blog post. So all in a sudden, this kind of like became, some important knowledge to, available out there, right? Not just in the academic circles. And I think it's great to see this happening.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think this is always great when we manage to like take something from one area, sort of transplant it into another one. It's like, and then suddenly you see the parallels or you see the relevance and you realize, oh my God, I should maybe look at really also research from other fields to understand what I'm doing. Yeah.
Yeah.
And in a similar way, in episode number nine, like the ninth most popular one, was with a physicist, and it was about listening to data from space. It's such a crazy episode. I think that might actually be my favorite one because it's so out there. And so Scott Hughes, he sonifies the sound of gravitational waves, and he's been working on it for a long time. And then finally, they were actually discovered. So before, he was just simulating it and sort of playing how they could sound like. And then there were actual measurements, so he could sonify how they actually sounded like. And we had like a lot of sound bites, obviously, in the episode. Again, huge logistical challenge. Like,
oh my God,
you know, like to get all these sound snippets together and to have everybody hear them, but also record them and whatnot. Crazy, but totally paid off. I love this one.
Yeah, I agree. That's another one where we went out of our comfort zone, and it almost always like pays out. And Scott also is another one of those guys who he starts talking, and and you love the way he talks and the stories he tells. Is also the classic physics professor who can tell a lot of interesting stories. I loved recording this episode, and as you said, it's been a huge challenge from the technical standpoint, trying to play the sounds while we were recording, but it's been a lot of fun. I loved it. It's another one of my favorite ones.
And I'm still thinking about sonification. At some point I need to do a sonification project. It's gonna happen. Yeah,
it's a little bit on the fringes still, but yeah.
Totally. And it's so hard to get right, but I feel like, I don't know. I'd like to get it right. And it sort of also fits to the 10th most popular episode, because it's also about science.
Yep.
And this one was about science communication with Jen Christensen from Scientific American.
Yeah. That was a great one as well. Yeah.
But to me, it was shocking how little science communication we had in the end. Like in the 100 episodes, maybe there's two or three maximum, which is sort of, it seems like such a natural thing to do because I'm super interested in it. I do a lot of it, actually.
Yeah.
You are a scientist, so absolutely. I don't know.
We should do more of that.
A blind spot there. Yeah, but
I have to say, it's also like Jen is another one of those persons who's very eloquent and very clear when she speaks. And I love listening to her. I think that's another huge privilege of doing this show. We have awesome people on the show, and just listening to them is amazing. We don't know before recording what they're going to say, right? And just the only thing we can do is trying to ask the best questions and provoke the most interesting thoughts. And some people are just awesome. And Jen is definitely one of those people who just start talking very interesting ideas. So it's been great.
Yeah. Maybe we just invite her back.
we should. Yeah.
So shall we share a few like funny stories from the past now that we're already in memory lane?
Let's do that. So I think I would start from probably the first memorable moment I can recall is when for the first time somebody decided to call us exotic Eurovoices.
And it was a guy from Australia.
Exactly. That was so much fun. And
that was like for a long while, it was like a running gag, you know, the exotic Eurowise thing. And we were just debating who else to invite who also has an interesting accent and so on. So.
Yeah.
The first 10, 20 episodes, I think we mentioned it at least once per episode. Sort of died down after that a bit. But if you're new to the show, listen to the early ones and have maybe a laugh or a cringe. I don't know. But we had some fun there.
Yeah, exactly. That was Ben Hoskin from Flink Labs.
Yeah. Hey, Ben.
Thanks so much, Ben, if you're listening to this. Yeah, we're still using it.
You created a meme, exactly.
We created a meme, yeah.
You're internet famous now.
Yeah.
What else? You were kicked out of a room once. Like, we had like a sort of a recording on the run, more or less.
Yeah, I don't know how much. Yeah, sometimes probably in the recording, people don't realize what happens behind the curtains. But there was a time when I think we were interviewing. Mike Bostock. Yeah, exactly. And from my side, I was recording from while attending a conference. So I was looking for an empty room somewhere and started recording, right? And then...
As one does.
In the meantime, what happens is that the conference was over and people started cleaning all the rooms. And I started hearing this huge machine coming from behind me, like... like this, and they kicked me out, and I had to run out of the building because I was also afraid that the building would just close and I was stuck inside, and I had to run away. So basically, I think in that episode you can hear my voice at only at the beginning and at the very end of the episode. And it was so much fun. It was so much fun. I just had to run with my laptop on my hands and ran very fast. So that was hilarious.
Yeah, we just had a similar situation where I think I finished off an episode without you because you sort of the internet dropped or whatever.
Yeah. And when I came back, you just said, don't worry, we're done.
And Florian, our sound engineer, just edited in some byes and thank yous from you at the end. And I think nobody really noticed.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. Anything can happen. I mean, we record remotely. So, and you know, anything can happen. Like we have four people or three or four in different rooms across the world connected via internet trying to record live audio recordings. So you can imagine anything happens. With Jeff here, we have a funny thing going on. So we had him three or four times on the show.
We have a curse.
Every single time we were not able to actually hear more than 5 seconds in one piece of him. It's like he has this sort of really funky Wi-Fi setup or the router or whatever, but it's always he starts saying like, yes, and the amazing thing is actually, and it's like nothing, and you just then hear, and this is how we did it, and then you're like, oh man, okay, Jeff, can you repeat that just for us so we know what you're talking about? And he's like, yeah, sure, no problem. So the amazing thing is, it's gone again. And he's like, and then at some point we just assumed what he might have said roughly like thematically, and just ask the next question where we thought it could fit.
That's a good example of mind reading. So
yeah,
we did our
there's
best.
So many things people can say in this context, so it must be one of those.
And
so for some of the Jeff Hare episodes, we only understood them once we listened to the final cut.
Yeah, there are all sorts of crazy situations, and there is also all the, during the post-processing, people just do a lot of different kind of things, some weird things. We have people just forget to use a proper mic, or people who have been sharing their whole Dropbox with us, or whatever. So fortunately, by now, we have some redundancy in the way we produce the episodes, so it's been more robust than in the past, but all sorts of crazy things happen. So if something can happen, it does happen sooner or later.
Usually, yes.
Usually it does.
Yeah, this is also how we developed our process. So we're not professional podcasters, as I just guessed. And so we just, in the beginning, started recording stuff and putting it on the internet. Then, yeah, over like, yeah, dozens of episodes, only figured out, okay, this maybe is what needs to happen in this order. And yeah, so yeah, it's insane. Yeah. What else? So we had the... We had a little feud between Andy and Robert going on for a while. I think it's sort of, it has relaxed a bit, the situation, but there were tense times. So they sort of tried to be more on the show than the other one. It sort of always have the last word. So there was a little interesting blogger rivalry going on there. But I think things are good now, right? Or have they just given
from
up?
Time to time, yeah. I see some tweets coming from Andy Kirk or Robert Cozara. Just having fun with each other. So it's a nice thing.
Yeah,
it's been a while. When is the last time we had Andy or Robert? I don't remember.
It's been a while. Yeah. So maybe we need a new couple. For another with celebrity deathmatch.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, actually, it is nice if there's a little bit of fighting and bickering going on, I think. Also, for instance, the storytelling episode with, we had Robert and Alberto, I think.
That was a fun one.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, because there was actually like a difference in opinion, and we had sort of fun in sort of battling it out a bit. And actually, that's good. I mean, there's so many things where we all basically, everybody's interested and everybody has the same opinion, but it's always nicer if you have something to actually fight about. I think it often makes better conversations. Yeah.
What was that during that episode? Somebody said the name of the show is Data Stories, but there's someone who doesn't like stories at all. Something like that.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. We recently had a tweet about that. It's like, oh, that's strange. Like, yeah, it's a bit complicated. I have a complicated relationship with that name.
Yeah.
Anyways, it's been fun. We've been looking back a bit now, going through the archives. We want to put together really comprehensive data sets, like of all the episodes with all the metadata, all the audio files, all the images. It's actually not so easy because WordPress is originally not made for podcasts, and then you use a plugin and everything is spread across different tables with five different identifiers. So we are sort of working on that, but we could also use some help. So if somebody of you is in a mood for data cleaning or like helping us structure all this back archive information a bit, that would be amazing, because I just started doing a bit of network visualizations with all the related episodes.
Yeah.
We've also been tagging episodes, and now we come up with new categories, like just from looking back over the 100 episodes. And I think for many people, it could be great if they had, let's say somebody's really interested in data journalism, it would be nice to see just the data journalism episodes and being able to catch up on all of those. And so we'd like to improve access like to the archive a bit more. Yep. And maybe also you can do interesting things with just the data and give it some interesting shape and see if we can visualize the data stories archive in interesting ways. So, but first step is data cleaning. As you have learned probably from listening on the show, 80% of data visualization is actually data cleaning. And so we can use any help there. So if you'd like to help us there, that would be amazing. And please ping us on Slack in the Slack channel.
Yeah.
Because we're doing it right now, basically. Or maybe we have done it when you're listening already, but feel free to ping us. There's always more to do.
Yeah, and I think once we have some properly formatted data out there, all sorts of creative stuff can be done out of it. So I think the limit is the sky here. I think what would be really nice to do is to be able to download all the audio files and do something with it.
That would be awesome. Yeah.
Trying to extract metadata out of them.
100 times, one hour.
Exactly.
Like,
so yeah, it's big.
Right.
But if you guys are listening to this and have any idea on how to do this properly without spending too much, let us know. That would be really cool.
Yeah. So, yeah, we went through the archives and we just thought a bit about what were actually the main themes we were covering. So a huge one is, of course, art and design. So we always try to have interesting practitioners on the show, people doing interesting stuff with data. And I think one of the really typical data stories episodes is somebody who did an interesting project, telling about how they did it, why they do it, stuff like this. So I always enjoy those.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of those in the archives. And I think we might just put a list of all these categories maybe in the blog post so you can...
Yeah.
If you're interested in one of these themes. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just check out all these episodes.
Yeah. Art and design is definitely one of the biggest ones. And we have lots of awesome people. I think I'm not even sure if I should name anyone in particular because they are all so interesting. And some of them are really mind blowing. Maybe I'll just mention one. I think data sculpture, it's definitely one of those ones where I think Moritz, you've been proposing it and I didn't know much about it. And when I actually started researching for the episode, then having them on the show, I was like, wow, oh my God, these guys are awesome. These old ideas of having data sculptures and the way they look and the process behind them, it was just unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Unbelievable.
So you mean the one with domestic data streamers?
Yeah.
Number 58?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Really good one. Yeah. And they do amazing work. Yeah.
Yeah,
really
exactly.
Good. Yeah. Dear Data was also really, it was a really influential episode. Yeah, so we linked back to it very often. And the whole project has been so seminal that goes without saying. It's been a huge inspiration for everybody.
Yeah, absolutely.
Second big chunk of episodes is about conferences. So we had one from Malofier. We always do one from Viz conference. We had Tapestry conference reviews, Open Viz conference. We actually also produced, with the help of Destry, our producer, an Information Plus summary conference, summary episode, which was amazing, I think, where we actually took snippets from the different talks or a couple of talks and then commented on them. Really nice format. Again, logistically a huge challenge, but some of the good stuff always seems to take work. But I like that. Like, doing conference coverage is a really nice niche.
Yeah, it's been another one of those experiments that we have done during the last year or so. I think we want to do more of that if possible. Of course, it's a lot more work than usual, but it's definitely an interesting format, trying to, take snippets from conferences, from the talks, and propose them on our show.
Yeah.
And I think there is a lot of interest.
We even did a TV episode once. Do you remember
we
that?
We did, yeah.
Yeah,
with Gregor.
Like, there was a video episode.
Yeah.
Yeah, crazy. But I think that was really good, actually. So the main reason why we didn't continue doing that, it's a lot of work. And we felt it was a break with our normal format. So, like, you have to sort of produce it totally differently. But in principle, somebody like having a screencast running and explaining a visualization like Gregor did, really great. So if you haven't seen that one, check it out. It's really nice.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm really pleased to see, probably that's the first time I realized that. We've been doing the IEEE Viz conference from the very beginning. We didn't skip one. So I think that's a good service. I think one of the things that I really do care about since the beginning is trying to take information coming from academia and make it more available to practitioners. And I'm really happy to see this happening on Data Stories. I hope that's been useful to people to get a better sense of what academics do. And I think we academics have a weird way of talking about our work or not talking about our work, actually, outside of academia.
Right,
so
right.
I think it's very important to see this happening. And I hope there will be even more opportunities to do that.
Yeah. No, and I think a few of the past episodes have proven that there's huge interest in that also from practitioners. So
yeah,
for sure. Yeah. Another big chunk is data journalism.
Of course.
So we had great people there. We talked about Amanda Cox already, but we also had a couple of times folks from ProPublica, which are amazing. We had Matt Daniels from Polygraph. We had Alberto Cairo a couple of times. I mean, Robert Kozara. Yeah, you know, really, yeah, really good people in that track. Simon Rogers. Yeah. It's like, wow. really good stuff. And I think that's also because, to me, data journalism in the last 5 years, if we talk about the big arcs, has been one of the most exciting like fields. And a lot of the real practical innovation came actually from journalists.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think if there is a reason why visualization became so popular, I would say data journalism is probably the reason number one, right?
Sure.
A lot more people have been exposed to visualization through journalism. It's been huge.
Yep.
And if I remember correctly, kind of like almost started a little earlier than when we started data stories. So it's almost like the two things went in parallel. Yeah. So having people from data journalism on the show has been just a natural progression, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm curious to see what is going to happen next, right? Maybe, I think, as you said before, journalism had a little bit of a blow with the last elections, right? And
I wouldn't. I mean, the election thing is mostly about predictions, right? I mean, I think that does not touch any other form of data journalism. I think this conflation is pretty stupid.
Yeah, but I think we have also seen people from New York Times kind of like changing format and looking a little bit more inward and trying to change the way they do some things. So I think it's been, for a while, it's been mostly an upward trajectory. And now there is a little bit more of a reflection on what's next in data journalism.
Sure. Yeah.
So that's also very interesting.
Which is good. Sure. Yeah. But I wouldn't throw out the baby with
bathwater. Oh, no, absolutely. Water. No. Not at all. Yeah.
Just making sure. Then we had a lot of folks from industry, like applied fields, also a lot of people actually from research in industry. Or I think that's also a recurring theme for us, like really how to do innovative stuff in corporate context or how to bring academic stuff to applied situations. And I always enjoy those episodes and also the ones where people just report a bit on how it's actually like to do data visualization, right? And so we had a couple of really good episodes there, I think, as well.
And I think industry, I think that's another one of those areas where I feel like things are getting better and better. And we are trying to cover more of what is happening in industry on the show. Like our last episode has been on what is happening at Capital One with Kim Rees, recently hired as head of data visualization, which is a really cool to see this happening, right? So having a position called head of data visualization in an industry that is so big. So something is definitely happening out there. And we had a few conversations. We had a very interesting one with Elijah Meeks on what is happening in industry. And I believe we are probably going to do more of that in the future. And of course, there is a lot of interest because people who are learning visualization or investing in visualization, they want to have a job eventually. So knowing what your chances are in the future, which markets and industry are going to be available for you as a professional, I think it's a very important topic.
Yeah. Yeah. Another huge like topic has, we mentioned a bit the year reviews already. I mean, this is sort of a tradition as well, just like the VIS reviews. These are fun, always nice, and always a good point to reflect.
Yeah.
Another huge topic is learning and teaching, I think. Yeah. So that's something we keep coming back to, like how do you actually learn data visualization? How can you teach knowledge there? What is the necessary skill sets? And all these things. And I think that's a hugely important topic. Also visual literacy. How much can we expect from our audiences? How do you design for different audiences? I think this is all super interesting. Yeah. We could have just a whole podcast series just on that, I guess, because it's such a wide field. Yeah.
That's what I was about to say. I think most of the feedback that we get from listeners, right? The way when they contact us via email or Twitter or other channels is mostly about people who want to enter the field and don't know how to do it, right? So imagine a person who's just doesn't know anything about this, is attracted by it, wants to start learning. It's still not very clear what the best path is. And so that's a big gap. And I think we as a podcast can cover some of it, but there's definitely a huge need. So if you're listening to this and you think you can do something in this direction, please do it, because learning this is still a little bit of a challenge, right? So I hope that in future years we are seeing more initiatives in this direction.
Maybe we should start a Data Stories university.
We discussed that a few
data
times.
Data Stories diplomas. Right? We've at some point think about that. We should offer tutorials.
We had these ideas for a while, but we're just too scared by the amount of work, right? I mean, we still have our day jobs. And launching a new initiative wouldn't be easy, right? And by now we know that, I mean, at the beginning, when you have a new idea, you're very excited. But when you actually have to do the actual work, it's so much harder. That's definitely a big gap.
Well, it's a great topic. And I mean, you keep experimenting in teaching, of course.
I do that,
right?
So,
and also on your blog, there's a few good articles from what you tried out over the last semester. So if you're interested, listeners, in learning about teaching and
that's a big thing for me. Right. I think what I notice is that as a professor, I can probably provide a lot of support and help. So one of the ideas that I have for the future is how to make these teaching and learning material more available to much more people.
Yeah. And then we cover a lot of like techniques and tools. I think in the beginning also we had a lot of episodes on, okay, this is how you can visualize networks. This is how you use color we had one on mobile and touch devices with Dominikus Bauer, who I work with a lot still to this point, nicely. And I think that's super interesting too. But I think at some point we sort of covered the basic ground there. And now the last, I think 20, 30, 40 episodes, we became much more interested in more, let's say, big picture stuff, like what are these social issues? What are like, what's the dark side of data? And what's, how can we actually achieve something with data? Like more the actual impact and less the, let's say, the details of how, if bubbles or lines are more effective, stuff like this, right?
Yeah, no, social issues and critique and impact has been definitely a big theme of the show. And I'm glad to see that over the years, we've been touching upon many, many important topics. And I think sometimes we call this the dark side of this. And I think it's important.
Yeah, but it's important.
It's very important because it's easy to fall into the trap of always say, hey, everything is great here, right? It's awesome. I think it's important to be, to have some self-reflection, right?
Right.
And figure out that there are also some problems, right?
Yeah.
One of the recent ones that's been so much fun is the calling bullshit one.
Yeah, that was a good one. But it is important. And if you think about like communicating with data and, you know, data visualization, you have to think about like what this all, in which context this happens and how it can be interpreted and who you're actually reaching and what this all means. Or also if you do like random data projects, right?
Yeah.
Some of them might be actually quite harmful in the long run. And so I think it is important to think about what's going on.
And I have to say, it's still quite hard to synthesize all this information into something, say, self-contained and homogeneous. I've been trying to do this for a recent course that I designed, and all this information is pretty scattered.
And it's also difficult to talk about data as such, or to talk about machine learning as such, or it's very much more complicated what's actually going on. So these are the big themes. Again, we're trying to sort of a bit structure our archives, and we'll put what we have like up in the show notes, and we'll maybe provide also some pointers of how you could help or contribute. But now we want to take another look behind the curtains. So we prepared a little segment already. It's pre-recorded, so there's a little break now, and then we will bring Destry and Florian on, who work behind the scenes on Data Stories. stories, and they will tell you what needs to happen to actually get an episode out and all the actual work that goes into this. So enjoy. So one thing we wanted to talk about as well is how our episodes actually get made. And I'm sure it's something everybody has been wondering all the time. How is the sausage being made? The German-Italian sausage?
The behind the scenes.
Yeah. And actually, it's quite a process to get such an episode out. And to tell you a bit more about how that works, we have two very special guests. We have Destri and Florian, who help us with the production of the show. And they can tell you all the details.
Our wizards.
Hey there.
Exactly.
Hello.
Hey there. Good to have you on. So can you tell us a bit about yourself, Destri?
So I live in New York, and I produce podcasts, and I also study data visualization, although I think my heart is really in audio. What else? That's it.
And what do you do on the show? What do you do with for Data Stories?
So mostly I help with the pre-production, right? So booking the guests, getting everything set up ahead of time, taking notes during the interviews, and then helping Florian to get the episode edited. And then promoting it, publishing it, and promoting it afterwards.
Yeah. Florian, how about you?
Yes, I'm living in Berlin, and I know Moritz for a long time because we are from the same area in South Germany. Mm-hmm. And I studied media arts in Weimar at the Bauhaus University. And there they have a chair, which is called experimental radio. And it was there where I discovered my love for audio. And it never faded since. And now I'm mostly, how do you say this in English? Director for dubbing for computer games. So I direct the voice actors for German versions of computer games.
So the last few weeks you have been surrounded by orcs and giants and so on, right?
Mostly orcs, yes. was the past half year, actually. I miss them already, to be honest. I miss them already. For Data Stories, I'm editing all the files you sent me and make sure that no bad sounds are aired. And yes, I'm doing the chapter marks and the ads and all the segments, the catchphrase, and stitch it all together so that the listeners have a final episode in the end.
True. So what we wanted to do is like go through from beginning to end all the little steps that need to happen. And it's quite many, actually, that we realize until an episode goes out. So Destri, how does it usually start? Like,
so it starts with a brainstorm, right, about who to invite on the show. Mm-hmm. And that comes from internal conversations, but also comes from guests or listener suggestions of guests, right? So on the Slack channel, on Twitter, mostly those are the ways that people suggest.
Yeah.
And I think we try to think about having a mix of geographic diversity and gender diversity, although that can be hard in tech sometimes.
Hmm.
And then reach out to people and invite them. And sometimes they've heard of the show and sometimes they haven't. So sometimes we have to give them a little context about what the show is about and try to persuade them to come. We don't pay anyone to come on the show, so we have to persuade them that somehow it'll be good for them, or at least a good time, a good conversation. And most times people say yes. Our response rate is really good. It's very infrequent, actually, that someone just doesn't respond or says no. And then it just becomes a process of prepping them for the interview. We share notes with them ahead of time and it's very collaborative. So whatever they want to talk about, we're also open to hearing. And then we record over Skype or sometimes Google Hangouts, which is probably the most fraught part of the production process. we were saying before that we want this to be a call for someone to please develop better web-based calling software.
Yeah,
please, it's, please, you're listening to
this. Yeah, it's such a huge problem. Yeah. So to the listeners, probably you don't know, but there's no real software out there that allows you to record multiple people over the internet in individual tracks that are synchronized. It sounds like a very basic thing for like a podcast. Yeah. And this is what you need to do proper audio treatment.
That's
right?
That's the biggest
thing.
That
would be really great. Yeah. But there's no good software for that. It's amazing. And so
Not any that you don't have to pay thousands of dollars.
Yeah,
for.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. It's like, okay. But and even then it's not that easy. So so what we end up doing is we have a Skype call, or we try to have a Skype call. More or less. Which is already a challenge, as some of you might know. And then everybody records locally. So everybody on their computer records their audio. And then we hope all goes well. Usually it doesn't.
I think one thing that people don't know is the famous clap that we have to do.
Oh, yeah.
Every time.
Can you explain the clap?
Yeah. So basically, we are talking via Skype, but everyone is recording individually locally. So in order to make sure that the audio tracks are synchronized and that Florian is not pulling too much his hair in his head, we have to create a synchronization point. So what we do is that the guest typically has to count 3, 2, 1 and clap. And we record this clap from our headphones, putting our headphones next to our mics. So it turns out, since every time we have to do that, we have a large collection of claps. So if you have any ideas on what we
if
can do.
If you're an electro DJ and want to have a really cool clap for your next track. We
should make it open source, an open source library of claps. And of course, we have all sorts of weird stuff recorded before we start recording the actual show. That would be fun as well.
Yeah, it would be a shame if somebody would publish all these private conversations. Who would do that? Yeah. I mean, unless they were threatened, maybe.
Well, we're not planning to become politicians anytime soon. So we're on the safe side, I guess.
Yeah. But yeah, it's worth mentioning too that I don't know if most people know this, but a lot of conversations that happen in podcasts happen remotely. So a lot of the famous podcast and radio interviewers that you think of, maybe Terry Gross and Fresh Air, most of those conversations happen not in person. So we also rely on the generosity of our guests to provide their own microphones and headphones.
True.
So we ask them to do that, and they are very generous in doing that too. And that's what assures better sound quality too.
So what happens next, Destry?
Take a lot of notes during the conversation.
That's so
try to
useful.
Identify.
Yeah,
I try to identify where we can post links or share certain images, because we're a podcast, an audio format about a visual medium.
Problem starts. Yeah.
Yeah. I think if our listeners are not referring to the blog post or the website while they listen, I think I would really encourage them to do so, because it'll make for a much richer listening experience. So then we sync all the audio once we've gotten the audio, and we send it off to Florian, and then he starts working his magic.
Florian, so how does your magic works? Our wizard.
It's not so much magic.
I think people have no idea what kind of files you receive and how much work you have to do.
Yeah, the thing is, every time it's different, so you can't...
We have very different ways of screwing up, right? Very creative on screwing up.
Yes, you can't establish a process on which you can rely all the time, because it's every time different, but... That makes it also very interesting. I honestly, I've learned a lot in audio editing over the past 2 years. And yeah, typically I check the Dropbox and download all the files there and import it in my program. And I'm using Samplitude for editing. Yes. And then first thing I do, I export every stereo file to a mono file because audio typically only needs mono panning and no stereo, especially for the podcast format, because you don't want to wobble the voice from left to right. That's only irritating. And yeah, then I search for the famous and already mentioned clap.
Where is the clap?
Where is the clap? That's it's really interesting because I had everything from the perfect clap and on every track it was more or less the same volume from, okay, was this the clap or was it another sound? I'm speculating now. Yes. and then I'm set, and then I just go through the whole episode and cut things out, like the S and the sounds or the P sounds, explosive sounds. And while I'm editing, I'm also setting the chapter marks already, because I learned it's way more faster to do it on the fly than afterwards, because you have to go through the whole file again and again. In the end, I cut out the catchphrase, and then comes the second part, which is the mastering and EQing. So I adjust the volumes of all audio files that they are equally.
And it can be very irritating if you have multiple people and one is always like louder than the others, right?
That's the aim is that in the end everybody has the same volume. So I typically use a compressor first, so it compresses everything on a certain band of volumes, because you need some room for like heavy laughter, which occurs quite often in the show. True. And also typically every person starts very loud in the beginning of the sentence, and in the end it gets very soft. Yeah, then a little bit of EQing, denoising, and then I upload it to our WordPress site, and there's a cool online tool called Euphonic, which also does some limiting and compressing, and the rest is automatic.
More or less. Yeah. Euphonic is really cool. That's also a good tip if you want to do like a simple way to just clean up a sound recording, like a voice recording. It does a lot of things out of the box. It's not as good as having a Florian, but it's a start.
I think what Florian described is when things go particularly well.
Yeah, that's like never happens, I guess.
That's the best case scenario.
What are some of the things you have encountered, Florian? What are some of the sticks we throw in your
what
way?
Kind of monsters did we throw at you?
Countless. Beginning from air conditioning in the room, and not so good microphones from guests, or
multiple audio files are great too, right? If it's like if the recording stops and restarts again at random points, it's amazing.
Then Destry's notes are helping quite a lot. Or typically if the guest only has some cheap earplugs and has the volume of the Skype call so high so that the earplugs, the sound of the earplugs is also recorded on his microphone. So
you have all the recordings bleeding into each other, basically, creating this sort of incomprehensible like noise, and you cannot. It's hard to fix, right?
Yeah, it's hard to fix, or basically you cannot fix it. And what happens then is you can't just push around the the audio files. If you say, okay, this pause is too long, I want to shorten it a little bit, mm-hmm. because you always hear the other ones talking out of the microphone. So yeah. This is typically the worst case scenario.
Which somehow happens every 2 weeks.
Yeah, but sometimes you do some kind of like cut and pasting that that looks just unbelievable to me. When I hear it back and I hear what you did, it's like, how did you do that? It's like you take pieces from that we recorded later on and put them at the beginning, and it sounds like as if we actually recorded it this way. That's some of the most amazing stuff that I've seen happening on the audio side.
One funny thing, at one point, Enrico was thrown out of the Skype call, or your recording stopped somehow. I don't know. Yeah. And there was
he
no
just
Enrico.
Disappeared. Yeah.
There was no Enrico at the end, and I thought it would be really nice and polite for Enrico to say goodbye at least. And so I took a goodbye from an earlier episode and pasted it at the end.
Nice.
I love that.
Yeah. Cool. And so, Florian sends the edited files. Destry, what happens then?
Then we prepare the episode, and Enrico typically writes it, and Moritz does the images, and then I edit everything and make sure everything's there most of the time, and then publish it out to the world. And then we promote it on Twitter and in Slack, on Facebook, and try to
do a little movie animations, keynote thread. Nice hack. Yeah.
Yeah, make little visuals, because Twitter still isn't a very audio friendly form, and neither is Facebook. So both of those social media platforms are much friendlier to video. So it's easier to use those, and try to just generate attention and let our guests know, of course. That's the process. Watch the conversation around it.
Lots of little steps, and it really took a while until we found like a good process. We're still tweaking it, right? So it's still, yeah. But it's a long checklist. And we use a Trello board, which has proven really like useful.
Really helpful,
there's a long list of potential guests and a shorter list of guests. Yeah. And then
we have an interesting workflow there.
Every recording moves from like left to right on the board, basically, from planned to scheduled, recorded, edited, and so on. So that works quite well.
Yeah. Considering we're four people in three countries, is that right?
Across times and
Across time zones, and often interviewing people in completely different time zones.
Around the world. It's true. Did we ever have a total disaster? Did we ever I think we always managed to somehow produce something.
I think
usable,
we had a couple of times where we had to re-record.
I can think of one.
Yeah, parts. Yeah. Did we have a total?
Total failure.
Yeah, I don't want to say who it was.
We don't talk about that. But
we did.
Oh yes, there was a whole second recording of a full episode. Yeah, not talking. Not gonna say who.
I think.
But the second one was
amazing
and really successful. Yeah. I'd say that.
Yeah, exactly.
And so,
so it was really worth it. Yeah.
The first recording, I think, was after a conference, and everyone was a little exhausted and brain dead. And when we listened back to the recording, it sounded like nonsense. So
we have some quality control here.
It hasn't stopped us in the past. Why suddenly care about nonsense?
So in case this is not clear from the description, without these two guys, the show couldn't exist, basically. So it's a huge amount of work. And I want to take this opportunity to thank you. I think it's awesome.
Data stories
couldn't exist without you at this point. It's a really complex process. And thanks.
Thank you for making this amazing podcast happening and possible. So
did you learn interesting things about data visualization? So the interesting thing is Florian is really an audio and media guy. So for you, the whole data viz thing is totally a different world, right?
Yes.
What were the main things you found interesting, or that you stumbled over maybe, or that you found curious?
So I started to work with you on episode 52. That was March 2015.
Long time ago.
And just before the recording, I skipped through the episode list. And there was this episode 58 with data installations with domestic data streamers.
Yeah,
a good one.
Like a melting pot between visualization and art. And I like art and also like modern art, meaning computer art or programmed art. So this was really a nice episode to listen to. And I catched myself while editing, more listening than editing. And after 5 minutes, I should go back and edit the last 5 minutes, and not just listen to it.
Yes.
Yeah. And another episode I found quite interesting was, of course, the Hans Rosling tribute, because I think he's a guy who made this, the work of visualization accessible for non-professionals in the field.
Yeah.
And I mean, there are a bunch of others I could mention, but I think these two stand out like the most of it.
Interesting. Destry, how about you?
The Hans Rosling episode, for sure. And I think I loved the year in review around the world that we did.
That was nice.
That was something. Oh my God, yeah, so much work.
Data viz around the world. Yeah, it was a lot of work. But I think it was a great opportunity to show that this is an industry that is global and is not just Euro or North American centric.
Yeah.
So
I liked
that. And because it's so much rooted in the web, there is an opportunity for people to contribute to it all around the world. So that felt like an exciting opportunity to showcase that. And I think when we had the data ethics and privacy episode also has stayed with me a lot. Maybe just because it's especially terrifying. All the questions that got raised by Eleanor Seda. Yeah. What about you guys?
Yeah, good question. I mean, but I agree. It's sort of it's something I observed is that in the beginning we were mostly about like techniques and it's cool to do data visualization and how do we do it best? Yeah. And now it has shifted much more to, exactly. Like, there might be problems and, how will all this play out and what does it mean in the big picture? And so. I totally enjoy that, but it's something I realized afterwards, like, oh, wow. A few years ago, we were much more like maybe naive, but also maybe more, I don't know, optimistic about everything.
Yeah.
But I still think it's super fascinating. So for us, it's mostly a way to just talk to people we want to talk to, right, Enrico? it's like a very complicated way to have a conversation with somebody. But
at the same time, there is a little bit of balancing there, right? Trying to cover. I mean, we really try not to have a variety, right? Of kind of like different, trying to cover different topics, different styles, different kind of people. So try to make it lively in this sense.
Yeah. But I think that's also still our biggest struggle is to really make it like varied and not fall into the same like sort of repetitive loops of we invite the people we know and we talk about the things we know how to talk about and so it's something we constantly try to like expand our horizon but it's also a constant struggle in a way, right?
That's one of the biggest challenge because you're always pulled by the latest things, right? You see something cool or a new person rising and you want to have this person on the show as soon as possible before somebody else does it. And so there's a little bit of struggle there, but at the same time, there are lots of interesting other topics and people that should be covered. And that's why I agree with Destry. I think the end of year episode, trying to go around the world, has been one of my main highlights from last year. It's like I'm really happy that we did that. And it was very, very revealing for myself going through the process of figuring out. So who is actually out there in other countries, right? We spend literally weeks just trying to figure out. So who is there, right?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Then it turns out that there are amazing people around the world, of course, right? So trying to keep our view wide enough and not focus only on what is shiny, I think it's something that can always be improved. And yeah, it's really important.
Yeah, maybe that's something for this year or next year to concentrate more on other continents or...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Every now and then to have someone from Asia or South America or Africa in the show would be nice.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, definitely agree. Yeah. So if you have good suggestions, we're always open for some good suggestions. Yeah. We don't know what we don't know. So let us know. Cool. Thanks so much. This is, we know how it works behind the scenes, but I hope our listeners found it interesting too. And if you have any questions on the production, let us know. Maybe you want to start a podcast as well and need some basic tips or basic traps to avoid. It's a lot of detailed knowledge you have to just acquire by making all the mistakes. And we have done a few. So let us know if you have any questions. And
yeah,
thanks, Destry. Thanks, Florian. It's great to work with you. And let's hope we can do another 100 together. I wouldn't mind. So
me neither. Thanks to you guys.
Thank you.
Thanks, Destry. I think the team is super cool, and the communication is always so warm and welcoming, and it's fun, and I'm learning a lot. So, and I get paid a little bit for it. So, what else do you want to
learning
have?
A lot, getting paid a little bit.
Yeah. That's what we should put on the team page of the website.
Yep.
The team is super cool, and I get paid a little bit for it.
Yeah, that's how it works.
Yeah, by the way, I think that's a good opportunity to mention the fact that when we ask you listeners to help us and donate some little sum using Patreon, it's because we want these two amazing guys to keep working for us and just get paid a little bit because they do amazing work for us. So I guess now you have a little bit more details on what happens behind the scenes. It's a lot of work.
True. So thank you, and hope to have you back at some point.
Yep.
Yeah. Cool.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
I think I'll be hearing you.
Way more than you intend.
Okay, so now we want to briefly cover what has changed during the last 5 years, kind of like a little bit of a reflection of what were the main themes. And so me and Moritz have been thinking about what happened, right? It's been five long years. Can we identify any major trends? Yeah. Some of them I think we already mentioned, but we have a few notes on that. So Moritz, maybe you want to start with your first one?
Sure. I mean, we just listened to the start of episode one and we both said like, wow, we sound so young. It's like everything was different then. It's like, you know... I mean, in many ways also the same, but it's a lot has happened in these 5 years for sure. And
oh my God.
I mean, I've been doing like data visualization professionally, like for commissions, maybe like 10, 12 years now. So I think I've seen sort of a few really long arcs of developments. But these 5 years, also the last 3 years even seem there has so much has changed and so much has been going on in terms of how the field has matured, how much it has split up also in all these little sub-disciplines. So I thought data visualization is a niche. And to the outside it is. But now I see all the niches in the niches. You know, it's like, it's crazy. And so, yeah. But I mean, thinking back at the beginning, I think I was mostly fascinated just by giving data an interesting shape and just making beautiful visualization pieces, right? So
yeah.
I really loved like Ben Fry's stuff and Jonathan Harris and Martin Wattenberg's work, where they just managed to give like a unique, really on the point, interesting aesthetic shape to a data set.
Yeah.
And also just keep it a bit mysterious and make it this unique thing. Yeah. And not explain too much and not talk about it too much, but just, you know, produce a thing, put it out there, and that's it. Yeah. And so that, I think that was in the beginning also my approach in many ways. And I did work a bit in tools or software components or also like enterprise tools, but to me, the real interest in data visualization came more actually from this design artistic approach, right? And then also over the last 5 years, I think I learned much more about everything that needs to go around such a nice data piece, right? To actually make it a successful tool or to actually make it a successful communication piece, like all the user interface design, all the user experience aspects, the web design aspect, the social components, the sharing, the text, the wording, the communication. So I think that's one of the big things I learned only over the last few years, like what needs to go around the chart to make it successful. And I did a presentation with Dominikus, I think 2 or 3 years ago, or like a tutorial at Viz that was called Everything Except the Chart. And I think it summarizes a couple of things that we learned in that area, at least what you need to think of. And this has been one of the big like learnings to me. And of course, also in some form, some, let's say, lightweight storytelling, narration, communication aspects. I'm not going to deny that. So I think I have become more interested in also telling stories. I'll put it out there on the record.
Yeah.
But not always, not always. Yeah. I don't think everything needs to be a story. Yeah. And I mean, we discussed it a bit already. I've become much more skeptical of data as such. So like just by working with lots of different data sets and seeing how bad they are. And
I have to
like
say how, it's the same for me. Yeah.
Yeah. And like how many of them just fail to capture what they were intended to capture, like the huge biases in data sets. And then you get scared because many people are not aware of these biases and the problems and just interpret the end results, right? And so I've grown much more skeptical of our whole, you know, profession in many ways,
yeah.
Which I think is good. But and I think it also shows we need good, smart, educated, critical professionals working on data issues, right? It's like we can't leave that to just like data enthusiasts, let's say, who will do anything that sounds like technologically interesting. And I mean, yeah, lots of these things. And I mean, for me, everything has changed. I keep changing directions in my own work. So I did a lot of communications projects and I did a lot of like more like cultural analytics projects and art-like projects and like Selfie City and Broadway with my collaborators, Lev Manovich and others. And now I'm sort of circling back a bit more. So in the beginning, I did a lot of code myself and did various self-contained works. And I'm sort of, I get back to enjoying that quite a bit. And yeah, so maybe I'm going back to my roots.
Yeah.
And so right now I have really interesting projects. So there's one where we visualize the election. So in Germany, we have big elections coming up. And we visualize the search interest for the candidates together with Google. So we can track which keywords are being associated with which people. Super interesting. I built a really applied tool for the German railway company, like internally, so they can plan the heavy load days a bit better. So super applied. So I'm trying to prove that there is a need for bespoke and a good use for bespoke data visualization in the enterprise. And I also like have a more playful and more communications heavy project, like basically visualizing the ecosystem that is a company, you know, like all the people, all the relations, all the different fluid dynamics that go on for a German startup. So, and yeah, it's a nice mix of projects that are sort of much more, again, in my original ballpark, let's say.
Yeah.
But it's a lot of it has happened. How about you, Enrico? What's your take on the on the big arcs?
Yeah, I think reflecting on what happened during the last 5 years, I think that the thing that stands out for me is that for one, what is really interesting personally is that we basically started Data Stories a little earlier than I moved to the US and became a professor, right?
It's true.
So when I think of Data Stories, for me, it perfectly aligns with this big transition for me, right? And I think one of the main characteristics of becoming a professor is that all in a sudden you have to figure out what you really want to do, right? Before becoming a professor, you always have someone who is in one way or another guiding you, right? But when you become a professor, you have to figure out what you want to do. And definitely, I can say that Data Stories has been a huge influence in the way I decided to steer my work and my research. So I can clearly remember that as a researcher in visualization, I used to be much more focused on data analysis. And I was not aware of the fact that visualization was becoming so popular in terms of being used as a presentation or communication tool, right? So one of the first thing that happened was that I thought about how can I do research that actually is more on the communication side of this, right? Today, it sounds weird, but if you look at the body of research developed until, say, the early 2000s, right? It's been mostly about having this assumption that visualization is mostly a tool for data analysis.
And I think that's been sitting alone at a desktop computer, thinking hard, concentrating on a heat map. Yeah,
exactly. So the influence on my work has been huge, and that's the reason why. So looking back. When I became a professor here at NYU, I started doing research more on some experimental research on more on the communication side of this. So, for instance, I've been working on visualization and persuasion, right? Or visualization and deception. Can we deceive people with charts? And it's been a lot of fun running experiments on trying to figure out what happens when you expose people to this kind of information, right? Actually, very challenging. I have to confess that many times I felt totally inadequate, inadequate, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I've been learning myself a lot of these things. And another thing that I kind of like mentioned earlier, for me, it's been very important to see, I think Data Stories as a vehicle to communicate things happening in academia to practitioners and the other way around. Mm-hmm. So it's been always surprising and delightful for me to see. So say when I go to the IEEE VIS conference, that is mostly an academic conference, knowing that people are listening to it, right? Having students stopping me on the corridor and say, "Hey, I listened to Data Stories. It's awesome. Thanks for doing it," right? It's not just the pleasure of getting some compliments. It's more like knowing that there are people in academia who are actually listening to the amazing things that people, that practitioners are doing. And the other way around. I think that's always been one of the main motives behind doing the show for me. And and I think now it's much more established than before. Now you can, I remember, so we had a few academics on the show, and I know from their stories that they've been extremely happy to be invited as guests, right? I remember, I don't know, some people saying, "Hey, my students are so excited that you've been talking about our project on the show." So they see it as a way to kind of like sponsor, advertise their work. So that's something really, really important. And I have to say that academics have become so much better at communicating their work. Every year I see more and more people publishing, creating web pages, describing their work,
GitHub repositories,
videos, GitHub repositories. Yeah. That's one of the major trends I've seen in academia. And kudos to all of you. That's been great, right?
Yeah.
And what else? I think another big thing is teaching. I used to think of teaching mostly as, well, that's another one of those things that I need to do as a professor, right? Mm-hmm. And then listening to what is happening on the show and our guests and how much people are kind of like have a thirst for knowledge and learning and teaching learning material, kind of like been reconsidering how important teaching is in this field, in this space. I think, as I said before, teaching is huge, and it's definitely one of those things that I want to spend much more time thinking mm-hmm. about. And it's mostly this idea mostly comes from receiving so much feedback from our listeners saying, hey, how can I do that? How can I start? I really love mm-hmm. this field. Please tell me, where do I start? Which tools should I use? Which books are the best, right? Are there any courses out there? Should I go to a design school or an engineering school?
Right? It's always so hard.
We should actually create an FAQ somewhere. Yeah, Some of these questions are kind of like classics by now.
Mm, that's true. Yeah.
And that's mostly it. I have to say another couple of things. As I said, I'm really, really happy to see industry kind of like becoming more of a thing in visualization. I think there's always been some industry, but it's kind of like getting better, right? There are more companies and there are more positions within companies for people who want to do visualization. And I think
this has been
a source of reflection for me as a researcher, thinking, how can I actually do research that serves people, right? So listening to our episodes and figuring out that there are people who are doing visualization in many different ways. One of the questions that I've been developing over the years is, how does my work connect to what they are doing? And this mm-hmm. is still an ongoing struggle for me, right? I am one of those people who believe that what we do as researchers should actually serve practitioners and students. And I'm still struggling myself how to do that properly. So,
Yeah, I agree that there's much more positions and like teams being formed and that like people find their roles by now. One thing I'm still sort of looking for, and it's something I was actually debating already like 10, 15 years ago with Boris Müller, my professor in Potsdam when I was like studying, is there's really not enough adoption of data visualization like techniques in products.
Yeah.
You know, like they're. And at the time, we were looking at like visual designs for operating systems, you know, for computers. So we thought like, yeah, that's the next big thing, obviously, you know, everything will be like Venn diagrams and force layouts, you know, on the file system and, you know, stuff like this. But, and I think this is still not happening. I'm sort of,
I agree.
I'm still waiting here. Like, you know, like there has been a little bit of a push with all the quantified self and the sports apps and stuff like this, like. Yeah. A lot of the people serious about like training and sports are also mm-hmm, serious mm-hmm. about data, mm-hmm. but I think there could be much more. Also data visualization inspired user interface design, let's mm-hmm, say, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. But yeah, we'll see.
We'll see.
Yeah. And you forgot to mention podcasting has become a big thing. It was also that's like a crazy thing.
That's something that has changed considerably, right? I used to have, what, 2 podcasts in my list? One was Data Stories. And that's kind of like I'm always adding
Life,
new
maybe.
Ones and removing some old ones. It's huge. Podcasting is huge.
Yeah. And that was also fun to sort of follow that and be a part of that, like the podcast hype. It's kind of nice. Yeah,
we've been just lucky to start at the right time. And I also want to mention that, that's something that has changed considerably. There are quite a few data-related podcasts out there. So kind of like for a few years, we've been like solitary journey.
Right.
And now there are quite a few ones, right? And some of them are related to visualization. Some are more on machine learning. Some are more on data in general, data analytics. But it's great to see this kind of like ecology of data-related podcasts happening. that's definitely a good thing. I want
to
see more.
Should we give a few shout outs to
good
podcasts?
Absolutely, yeah.
What do you listen to?
Well, we have Policy Viz. It's clearly the closest thing
of
to
course.
What we do.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
John has done a great job. I'm really happy to see that there is at least another one great data visualization podcast.
And he has great
it's been
guests.
A little
like
bit of a
lot of the guests we have on our list have been on his show already and vice versa.
Right. The more of this podcast there are out there, the harder it is for us to catch one person, a guest.
Before John. Yeah.
but it's great. I think it's great to see this happening. Yeah. And
I also enjoy the 538 podcast.
Yeah,
it's a really good one.
Absolutely.
So, they've done a lot on the election coverage and keep going really good.
Yeah, yeah.
There's also more data science oriented ones.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
What do you listen to? Like partially derivative.
I really like Data Skeptic.
Data Skeptic
that's
is really
definitely
good.
My favorite one. The other ones tend to be a little bit too technical for my taste.
Mm-hmm.
I tend to listen to podcasts when I want to relax or just don't think too much. I found some of the core machine learning ones tend to be a little too technical for my taste, but it's just me. And but Data Skeptic has a very nice blend of, I don't know, I think that it's a very nice blend of telling some stories, but also giving a little bit of technical information, but never too hard that you cannot follow. And they also have this very nice format where they have mini episodes where they explain one specific concept in a few minutes without any jargon or anything. And so it's very well designed. It's definitely one of my favorites.
Sounds good. Listeners, if you have good suggestions for others,
let us know.
Yeah.
Or if you want to start your own podcast, do it.
Yeah.
So the best way to start a podcast, just do it.
proven method. Step one, start doing it.
Do it. Don't overthink it. Just do it. It's never been so easy, right?
Yeah.
Grab a mic and start talking.
Cool. I think we need to stop talking at some point.
Yeah.
It's one of the classic chatty Moritz and Enrico episodes.
Yeah, we haven't had good. A good one for some time.
Yeah, we never get to talk to each other, just with other people.
Yeah.
So what can you do? Yeah.
So maybe we can briefly talk about the future, what we intend to do.
Yeah.
Right.
Make bold predictions.
Predictions.
I was wondering, what do you think? Where is data visualization in the Gartner hype cycle, right? Do you know the Gartner hype cycle?
Yeah,
so there's a theory, there's like a new technology or a new idea, technique. Then it gets hyped to the peak of inflated expectations. Like that's so it quickly reaches maximum like interest and everybody thinks it's like gonna be awesome. And then it goes through this trowel of disillusionment, basically when people realize it's not that awesome.
Yeah.
And
I think we're
then
getting
slowly
close
has
to
crawl back up. Yeah, slowly on the slope of enlightenment. And then at some point it just gets adopted in reality, right?
Yeah.
And it's sort of not on the same level as everybody thought, but things find their role. Like, where do you think? Where are we there?
I think we're getting closer.
Not the podcast, to the data visualization as a whole.
Yeah, I think we're getting closer to the disillusionment. We had a few.
You think we're still downwards?
Yeah, I think we're still.
Oh.
We're getting downwards.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I saw us on the slope of enlightenment already.
That's,
damn it.
Okay.
That's too bad, man.
Well, okay.
Yeah. We'll see.
Yeah. But the future can only be brighter.
But we both think we're beyond the peak of inflated expectations.
I think so, yeah.
I think that's safe to say.
That's what we agree upon, yeah.
So, any other things for the future? Like, podcast-wise or data-wise?
From the podcast side of things, we will certainly keep doing what we have done in the past. As you might have seen, if you followed the podcast for a while, we've been experimenting quite a bit. And so I think we enjoy that. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But we definitely want to, we don't want to keep the show static from time to time. We have some classic formats, but we also want to try some. We want to experiment with new ones. So if you have any ideas, if you want to suggest something, let us know. Right?
Yeah.
But for sure, we will keep experimenting.
Yeah. Also, if you have interesting guests, we always take suggestions, and especially if these are sort of non-standard demographics or from interesting parts of the world, you know, or yeah, like interesting people. So if you have anyone doing interesting stuff, let us know. We're always happy for suggestions. We cannot actually bring everybody on the show that you suggest. So we do get a lot of them, but we really love to hear them. Yeah.
Yeah.
And also in general, like if you want to reflect a bit, like what has your journey in data visualization looked like up to now? Or has this podcast maybe taught you something interesting? What stood out to you? We would love to hear a bit about your personal data stories. So please let us know via email or in the Slack channel or on Twitter. Always good to hear from you.
Yeah. So I think it's time to wrap it up. Before we do that, we also need to talk about our Patreon initiative.
Yeah, so, we should. Yeah.
We've been talking about it sporadically during our few last shows. But basically what is happening is that, so I think it's worth repeating what we are trying to do here.
Sure.
And how it works. But the basic idea is this. So Data Stories has been supported throughout the years by several sponsors. That's been great.
Yeah.
And I think that's another opportunity for us to thank our sponsors.
We should especially thank Click, who have been supporting us all these years, like really amazingly. I think it's great stuff. But many other sponsors as well.
Yeah.
But Click has been especially supportive. Yeah.
So as you may know by listening to this episode, there is a lot going on behind the curtains. So we have two people working for us. And so in order to produce a good quality, high quality episode, you need some people to work on it, right? It's just not possible to do it without
many hours of work.
It's many hours of work. And this translates into needing some money to do it. So far we've been doing it through our sponsors, and we decided that we want to experiment with a new format. The format is having a crowdfunding sponsorship format where the show is sponsored directly by our listeners rather than, say, an industry sponsor or something similar to that. So right. It's important to clarify that we don't want to do that because we have anything against industry or any of the sponsors that we had in the past. I think it would be much, much nicer to have a show that is sponsored directly by our listeners. And also partially because we can basically reduce the amount that is spent on dealing with sponsorship. And this time can be used to produce our show. Right?
Yeah, totally.
Moritz, maybe you want to describe how Patreon works more in details?
Sure. So in a way, it's like a mixture of a subscription and a donation or something like this. In principle, you become a patron for the show. And that means you chip in, and for every episode that we produce, there will be a certain fee that you give us, like $2, $3, $5. And that keeps the show running. And this all works automatically. You just basically log in on the site. You become a patron for us. And then, Patreon manages all this process that we get the money from you and so on. And it's quite simple and painless. It's kind of nice. There's a little community site around it. We will post a few things just on Patreon, like special announcements, special questions. So it's a way for you also to become part of the Data Stories Club, more or less, which is kind of nice. And also for us a way to have a certain community and be in touch with you guys. And run this thing together. I think that's all of our goal. So Enrico and I, we don't make any money with this. It's really just for supporting the show and then making it a self-sustained
thing,
right?
Yeah. You can see that. So if you go on www.patreon.com patreon.com/datastories. You'll find a lot of additional information on why we want to do that and how it works. I think it's important to mention that we already have 47 patrons.
Yeah.
And I want to thank them.
Which is awesome.
Thanks so
yes.
much for
every single one
being early adopters. And maybe another source of confusion for some of these people has been that they haven't been charged so far a single dollar. So the reason is because basically, we start charging our patrons only when we reach our goal. Okay. So right now we are, so our goal is to have $600 per episode pledged. And right now with 47 patrons, we are at 278. So it's, we are almost halfway. So please consider signing up because we are not too far, right?
Yeah.
And as soon as we reach our goal, we will switch to having the show completely supported by you.
Right.
What else? Is there anything else we have to say about Patreon?
No, but except now is the best time. Because
now is the best time.
In a way, it's now or never. Yeah. We said we want to do this by June 2017. I think it is June. Checking my calendar. So, and in a way for us, it's, well, we want to do this, but it only works if enough people like join and, you know, do it. And so if you're sort of toying with the idea of, yeah, maybe, maybe not, do it now because A, we don't take any money right now. We only do it if we reach the goal.
Yeah.
And then you can still decide not to, like to unsubscribe basically at any time.
Yeah.
And if now not enough people do it, I think we might not do it at all, which
exactly.
would be sad.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, now is a good time.
Just yeah. saying. No, seriously, if you're listening to this, we are, now is the time to do it. If you don't do it and if we don't reach our goal, we just have to revert back to the old model. I just want to say that Patreon gives an amazing service to everyone and it's very easy to sign up. Everything is super clear. You will see that in our Patreon page, on the right hand side, there are several levels of pledging, right? And, for each one, you get different benefit, kind of benefits. And yeah, so I strongly suggest you just to go on the website and see how it looks like. And you know, as Moritz said, you can try for a couple of episodes. And if you don't like it, you can just revert back, right? And I think one another thing that I really like of the way Patreon works is that you get charged only for episodes that are published, right? If we don't publish, you don't get charged. So that's right. another reason why I really like this model.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. Well.
So join the club. and thanks for listening so far. This has been, a very, very long episode. That's also nice. Kind of fun.
Yeah.
And to another 100, Enrico, right?
Yeah. Well, thank you, Moritz.
Next big party is the episode 1000, of course.
Yeah, it's been
this
great.
Will be massive.
It's been great to share this with you. We went through so many things.
Absolutely. It's sort of, I mean, we also got to know each other through the podcast,
much better.
Right? I mean, in a way, we sort of just started it and didn't know each other that well. So
yeah,
it's nice to get to know each other through such a shared interest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, good.
Cool. Thanks so much. And
yeah, next time.
Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
See ya. Bye-bye.